It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, PacView's Melissa Burdick, special guest Jackie Donowski from Flywheel, and I'm PVSB, also from Flywheel. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of May 13th, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them polyhistorically intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com, it's retail right now. Jackie, kick us off, would you?
Disney Advertising and Walmart Connect to bring closed-loop attribution to streaming advertisers. Well, hello there, Fresh Four listeners. Disney Advertising and Walmart Connect have solidified an agreement to bring the retailer's industry-leading audience solutions and measurement to Disney's addressable streaming inventory. The collaboration will enable enhanced audience targeting and outcome-based measurements for brand campaigns across Disney's streaming portfolio, including Hulu and Disney+, connecting Walmart's customer insights with Disney's proprietary audience graph will help advertisers reach their desired audiences and measure the impact of their campaigns through closed-loop attribution.
Thanks, Jackie. Andrea, over to you.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. NBC Universal and Instacart link up to bring retail media opportunities to TV. NBC Universal and Instacart are expanding their existing partnership to include a new retail media workstream that will enable Instacart's CPG advertisers to connect with consumers via NBC Universal's streaming and linear television content. In late 2023, the companies teamed up to include access to NBC Universal's streaming platform Peacock as part of the Instacart Plus membership package. Now, with this new first-party data collaboration, advertisers will be able to reach consumers through NBC Universal's content and measure the impact of their campaigns by leveraging ad exposure and purchase data from Instacart.
Thank you, Andrea. Melissa, what do you have for us?
Amazon has announced a new country that they're opening up. Amazon has announced that it will launch a new dedicated website for Ireland in 2025. Currently, most Irish customers use Amazon sites based in the UK or other European countries. The company said the Irish site will mean that users will be able to avoid additional customs charges and currency conversion fees, and it will also lead to faster delivery and returns for many items. All right, over to you, Peter.
Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Sri Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bond, and Brian Gildenberg, explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, here are the CPG Guys. Hello and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I'm PVSB, and when I'm not co-hosting this podcast, along with my partners, I work at Flywheel, a division of Omnicom that helps brands of all sizes grow their full funnel commerce business. Along for our conversation today, he's my fellow co-founder of the CPG Guys. Please listen to his elder daughter Riaraj's music at riaraj.com, link in the digital liner notes of this episode, and follow his younger daughter Lara on her journey as a founding member of the brand new Cat's Eye Girls band, whose album debuts this June. Let me welcome my podcasting partner. Can't believe it's been 4 years going on now. He's the man known as Sri. Sri, you gearing up for Palm Beach over the weekend?
Yeah, at the time of this recording, I'm headed to NHCDS. I told my wife when I get done with this corporate journey, I'll never take a Sunday flight. Here we go. I'm flying on Sunday, so because the meeting is actually Monday morning at 9 a.m.
Yeah, but it's at the Breakers, right? That's a pretty nice venue to be going to, right? Down there on Palm Beach.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want you to misinterpret it as I'm complaining. I like 85 degree sunshine, but I live in SoCal, so we have plenty of it when we seek it. But at the time of this recording, I'm looking forward to meeting so many people in the industry, whether it's retail, whether it's brand, doesn't really matter. And that's what we do here on the CPG Guys. 375 episodes in, hard to believe some days.
I'm pretty shocked myself. Well, Sri, thanks for joining me again for what's going to be, I'm absolutely sure, a riveting episode. Before we get to our guest, we want to ask you to help spread the word about this great community we've created around the CPG guys, beyond obviously sharing this podcast with your friends and colleagues. If you're using Apple or Spotify as your podcast listening platform, please leave us a rating, as it really helps feed the algorithm that makes this podcast more findable by CPG retail professionals like you, looking for both education and a little bit of entertainment. We're very happy that the CPG guys is part of an impressive collection of highly rated podcasts, including Fast Forward, hosted by our very own Brian Gildenberg, CPG Scoop with our friends Risa Crandall and Jennifer Silverberg, and of course, the FMCG guys, which takes our format, takes it across the pond with our dear friends Daniel, Afrain, and Christine. And finally, we're incredibly proud of our allyship with Next Up, whose mission it is to advance the cause of women in business and to promote gender equality in the workplace. Next Up has terrific educational and networking resources available to its members. Sheree, of course, serves as a director on the board of Next Up. Links to our podcast, our sister cast, our landing page on Next Up, and the social media profiles of Sheree's daughters, Rhea and Lara, may be found in the digital liner notes of this episode. So let's get to our conversation. 2 years ago, I was participating in a Brand Innovators produced event in Chicago. One of the speakers at the event was, at the time, working at Kraft Heinz and shared the story of how they refreshed the iconic brand Kraft mac and cheese, or as my fellow Canadians would refer to it, Kraft Dinner. She's since moved on to join Eagle Family Foods, a Cleveland-based manufacturer of condensed milk, snack foods that is been built through the acquisition of numerous venerable and established food brands that will be quite familiar to our audience. I'm pretty sure she now serves as the vice president of marketing at Eagle Family Foods, and she is here to share with us her journey and how she sees this industry transforming. Please join Sheree and me in welcoming to the podcast, Cindy Bloom. Cindy, how are you? Welcome.
I'm good. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
We are very excited. You know, I was so absolutely impressed with your story about refreshing an iconic brand that I knew I would love to have you on. And the dirty little secret about this is we couldn't have you on because you were working at a company that competed with the company that my co-host here worked at. And we couldn't talk about for 3 years. There was this, anyone notice how I talk about what I do and everybody else talks about what they do, but Sheree never talked about what he did? Well, Sheree was at General Mills and he wasn't allowed to talk about it, but now he is. And we're allowed to talk to anyone we want because he's not at General Mills anymore. So the first thing we did is start going through our list of people that we really wish we could have had on the podcast, and couldn't. And now we can. So that's why we wanted to have you on here. So thanks so much. Before we get to the questions we prepared for you today, I think it would be really great if you took just a little bit of time talking about what is Eagle Family Foods and then what's your role there?
Absolutely. Eagle Family Foods is a really interesting company because a lot of us CPG people probably haven't heard the name before, but we have big beloved brands. So Eagle was formed by acquiring brands that other companies just weren't putting enough love or attention into, right? They had grown too big, perhaps, or they didn't have the resources to really focus on these brands specifically. So some of the brands that you'll know and love are Hamburger Helper, Suddenly Salad, Creator's Popcorn, Popcorn Indiana, and then various brands under the condensed milk category, specifically Eagle and Magnolia are the two big ones that most people know. And I'm here, I've been at the company for about 6 months now as the vice president of marketing. So I oversee our marketing, innovation, and creative teams, really with the focus of driving these brands to new growth and profitability. So really great background at Kraft in refreshing those brands. Now I'm here to really reignite these brands that have kind of been forgotten about.
What a great story. I think we're going to have a great conversation going from here. Thanks for that overview, Cindy. To our audience, in the digital liner notes of this episode, we'll include links to Cindy's LinkedIn profile, Eagle Family Foods LinkedIn page, and of course, their corporate website so that you can multitask, learn a little browsing online while you're listening to us in your ear for this conversation. So let's get to that conversation. I'm going to kick it off and Sri will follow me. But let's start with you, Cindy. I mentioned the fact that you'd worked at Kraft Heinz and had some really great experiences. Why don't you share some of the highlights of your journey to becoming the VP of Marketing in Eagle Family Foods, focusing on what you consider like some pivotal moments or experiences that really brought you to where you are today?
Well, my journey actually started in advertising. So I worked on some CPG brands at J. Walter Thompson and BBDO, and then decided to pivot and come on to, you know, the manufacturing side. And most of my career has been focused in the big CPG world, a lot of food and beverage. So I've worked at Pepsi and Kraft and Kellogg's, some personal care at Unilever, which, as you know, really gives you that foundation, right? That skill set of being a well-rounded, multifaceted marketer. And a lot of my work has focused on refreshing, rebuilding, launching brands. So really heavy in that brand equity, brand building and general management area, as well as innovation, because innovation goes along with everything. In addition to that, I've worked at a couple smaller companies as well, where you have to think a little bit differently, right? So one of the companies was as small as just me being the marketer and having some contractors with me because it was a startup. And what that has done for me is allowed me to take that skill set and just utilize it in a different way and with a different mindset. And I think that combination of pieces of experience is what has gotten me to Eagle, that, you know, I have that skill set. I can work a little bit more scrappy. I think out of the box. I can get creative when I need to. And it's been a really fun journey. I think when they found me, I found them. So it was a great pairing.
How awesome, Cindy. And thank you so much for joining the CPG Guys this week. As Peter said, we wanted to chat with you earlier, and here we are. So your background, you've done the big brands via JWT. You came from a big brand yourself before getting to Eagle Foods. You used a word, you're here to refresh some of the brands that exist. I can't imagine this is easy. So what unique challenges do you face in marketing food products compared to other industries? Personal care being one.
Yep. Yeah. You know, I love working in the food industry because I say it's not for the faint of heart, because it's not easy. Food, when you really break it down, is one of the most basic human needs, right? We need it just to survive. And it can't lean on image or brand perception as much as a lot of other categories, right? So when you think about a car, you want it to be safe. Your beauty products, you want them to perform so that you're confident. Your clothing, right? You want to fit in and belong. Food is something that people don't put that much thought into. It's just something they need to survive. And it's also a category that others don't see, right? Others see your home, your clothes, your car, but they don't see the food that you're buying at home. It's also a category that is, for the most part, very easy to replicate by competitive companies. So you have this item that can be copied and that has nothing really special about it that I have to impress others or that gives me this, you know, extreme confidence. So there's a challenge in differentiating, having a real point of difference, and also creating loyalty to the brand itself, right? So when I think about, you know, how do you win in food? A couple things that my brain typically goes to is, number one, the product. I've said this for years. It's a saying that sounds a little kind of curt, but people don't like to put bad tasting things in their mouth. It just is, right? There is a very, very small percentage of people that will significantly sacrifice taste for some type of nutrition or health or performance benefit. So taste and quality is at the forefront. And that's where I think from the very beginning of your journey in food, you have to be really intentional about if you want to compete and survive in the industry. The other piece is attracting people at the point of purchase because you don't have that word of mouth. You don't have trends that are running in culture. So your packaging, your claims, and the value that you offer is so imperative because that's when that shopper is going to choose you or someone else. And this is your first step to winning that purchase and hopefully beating out the competition. And then when it comes to marketing, you know, for me, I never think of food as different. I always think about branding, even though it's a category that doesn't always thrive on branding. Because I believe that when you truly think about a purpose and how to connect with that shopper, what your point of difference is and how you can create some image, personality, values around your brand, you now start to take a step ahead of the competition and give shoppers a reason to pay attention, right? And then, you know, ultimately, as you get into tactics, I think food operates a little bit differently because you have to be so specific about your targeting. You know, it can't rely just on some celebrity thought it was cool. You have to be really specific and get lower in the funnel and very intentional about who you're targeting, why you're targeting, and how you're targeting.
So, Cindy, I have a follow-up to that one. Having come from some of the largest brands in the world myself, Pepsi, Frito, you know, Band-Aid, Neutrogena, and then Cheerios and Totino's and Pillsbury, we often think of brands as equity and that they're there to last a lifetime. So now all of a sudden, last 3 years, we're in significant inflationary challenge times with significant price changes and an upward track. What's the role of the brand, given what you just said, from a value perspective, given the gaps to private label in many categories for the average large market cap brand is like 30, 40% these days?
It's a great question because private label is a huge issue in food, right? So again, it doesn't exist in such a way as it does in food because things are recreatable. So when we think about building our brands and what the value is that they bring, it has to come down to a real value beyond price. So private label, anyone that's looking, it's a lower price, but there's usually something that is being given up. It could be nutritionals, it could be ingredients, it could be the amount of food you're getting, it could be the taste and the quality. There is typically something that's being given up when you go to private label. So for branded products, it's so important in my mind to really find your purpose and your point of difference. What are you selling that is different or gives someone that increased interest to go buy versus not just the competition, but the private label as well. And it comes in many forms. You know, as recession has hit, it's really interesting to watch shopper behavior. There are some things that you would think, wow, they'll never buy that. It costs more, right? It's higher priced. And they're running towards it because it gives them some other type of value, convenience, the taste, the quality, whatever it might be. So figuring out what that value is that the consumer is truly looking for is the path to getting that win in the store and in the basket.
I absolutely agree, Cindy. And I'm always amazed at how more commoditized a particular food or beverage product is, how much more challenging. And the one that comes to mind for me of recent is really Liquid Death, right? It's water. It's water. And so what's the value proposition there? It's certainly not the product, and it's certainly not it is the status. Like, they've actually been able to elevate the most commoditized of products that I can imagine, water, and build a brand around it and get people to want to buy into it because it's cool to sit there and hold a can of Liquid Death. So it's remarkable. But anyhow, Cindy, I come from the world of data and insights. Spent 9 years at IRI, 4 at Dunnhumby, 3 at CVS, and in the age of big data processing, right, we have access to copious amounts of insights. And so my question to you is, how do you, in your role, incorporate customer insights and feedback into the strategies that you are building from whatever data sources you have access to?
Yep. I am very lucky to actually have a lot of data sources at this company, despite us being a more mid-sized company. I've worked in worlds where we have nothing and you're, you know, asking your friends, and I've worked at, you know, the big companies that have almost too much. So I would say we have at Eagle exactly what we need. And for me, I use it throughout my journey to understand directionally where we should be going. So first and foremost, whenever I think through anything I'm doing, I always think about the three C's in order: consumer, customer, company. I do not think about the impact to company before I understand if the consumer and the retail customer are actually going to have interest and want to buy this thing. So I leverage a lot of syndicated data more so to understand where those trends are pulsing, what's growing, what has a continued growth path, why are things growing, how are they growing, right? How are brands interacting with each other? Who's sourcing from who? Just getting that total picture of the industry to help guide if I'm going into innovation or looking at advertising, targeting, or claims, where do I want to go? From there, you know, I really value the consumer's input because it is their daily life, right? They are not as close to things as we are. So a lot of times we do miss the forest between the trees because we have a marketing mindset. So it's nice to talk to consumers that say, no, no, I'm over here. You know, you're over there on the other side of the field. I try very hard not to ever take a consumer feedback as Bible. It's not for me used as a black and white, a go or a no-go, a hard decision, but I think they lend insights that can help us hone what we're doing and push us in a direction that we can then evolve and grow with. That said, I also use the retail customers. So I think it's important to have that one or two retail partner that you can bounce things off of. Again, they know what's going to sell. It's their store. They will look at the incrementality and the consumer, and they have a lot of great insight. So when we can, usually on bigger projects, I will tap into the customer as well and say, hey, you know, let's partner on this and let's bring this to life with the vision that we both can have. And we use that throughout the process. There is, you know, typically for me, there's multiple touch points throughout my journey, whether it be the marketing side or the innovation side or packaging wise. We take that journey with the consumer as our partner versus they're running the show or we're running the show.
Love that. You are 100% accurate that often when we run the race of marketing, we forget exactly what the consumer wants, and it's more about the P&L. It's more about fine-tuning the brand based on what we want to communicate. I bring it all back to communication at the end of the day, and that was a good, clear brief on starting with syndicated data, going down to the consumer input, having retail partners on what can and can't sell. The last 3 years have created absolute havoc with digital, no doubt, in a beautiful way. I love that it's actually created that havoc because it's challenged some of us who have been in this industry long enough to get out of our high horses that the physical shelf is the only thing that matters. And next thing you know, you look around, Walmart's business is now 20% e-commerce, not even digital. And then you go inside a store, 80 to 90% of the foot traffic actually is shopping from a phone. That could be some of the click and collect pickers, or it's a genuine customer who's looking at a price point match, or actually has made a list and is walking the aisles. So in that sort of world, as a VP of marketing, kind of heading marketing, how are you balancing traditional marketing methods with digital strategies in actually delivering outcomes for your customers?
Yeah, so first is I always think omnichannel, It's kind of funny thinking about where we came years ago. You would just say advertising, and that term has evolved in so many ways over the years. And now I think we're in the omni-channel world. But to me, it's all about connecting with the shopper, however you might do that. I always start with, how does the shopper shop? What's their total journey? And how do I get that flywheel going so that I hit them in their different parts of their journey and they start to consider me at those different points and keep me top of mind when they're about to make a purchase? That's the ultimate goal, is to make sure that when they're at that shelf or in that store, I'm top of mind. So when it comes to digital, what I love, and I'm talking digital, social, retail media, they all go together now. And it's a way to just stay extremely connected and also be a little bit more authentic than a TV commercial, right? So TV just talks at you. Whereas in this digital world, we can start having relationships and conversations, and we can start delivering offers that are very specific to you versus something that's very specific to me. So I tend to look at, what are my overall objectives for this time period? And then I start to narrow down and focus on what's going to be the most impactful and most efficient within the budget that I have to actually get that consumer into my world. What I love lately is the retail media space. You know, years ago, if you would have said, you know, tag Walmart in an ad, people would have lost their minds. Now, you're doing partnerships with Walmart everywhere. They're posting for you. You post for them. You have influencers taking people to Walmart. And it just becomes a more seamless experience, I think, for the shopper, right? We, in the past, I think, thought too much about ourselves or the retailer. Now it's about, how do we help that shopper get what they need in a very basic term? And whether that's online, in store, you know, delivery, whatever it might be, just how do you make it easy for them? Because that's what shoppers want more and more, is that convenience.
Cindy, I'll just say you had me at flywheel for obvious reasons. You had Sri at retail media, but a little follow-up to that. So when I look at your portfolio at Eagle Family Foods, I've got to imagine that recipe creation is something that that is particularly a focus for a lot of your portfolio, and that investing in digital strategies where your meal kits with Hamburger Helper or the milk products as an ingredient in a recipe are probably very front and center for you as you think about how you engage consumers. What are your thoughts around recipe mechanisms that get to the shopper, help them make a meal solution better, and how do you think about making sure your products are top of mind when they are thinking about recipes?
When we think about packaged goods, people turn to those because they are easy and convenient. These are usually not people with high culinary skill or tons of time to go create and look up, you know, different ingredients and go buy them at the store. And they want ease. What recipes do is provide that help, right? You can have, you know, the same pasta every night, but recipes help you make it, you know, chicken picante pasta. It's like, it gives you ideas to spice up what you're already doing. And when it comes to some of our products, they are just so ripe for recipes. And you'd be surprised how many people actually go to our websites and go straight to the product recipe page. Probably the most is within milk, because it's such a base ingredient within cooking savory or baking sweet. You can do almost anything with condensed milk or evaporated milk. And people go there to get those ideas. So what's powerful for converting to purchase is being the one that served them the recipe, and you have the product to help them get there, right? So one, the recipe pulls them in, and if it's different from something else they've seen, they're interested in it. So they're already accustomed to, hey, I think I'll buy that product. But then when it comes to the actual product, you know, suddenly salad is a great example. It's the only cold pasta salad in the store. So we can give you a ton of recipes to make it really exciting at home. And now you also have to buy the product because it's really the only one that's out there, unless you're going to go make your own pasta and dressings and stuff. So I think it just helps, the recipes help kind of create that connection to the brand beyond just the product.
Great thoughts there. I want to remind everybody that we have the incredible pleasure of speaking with Cindy Blum, Vice President of Marketing at Eagle Family Foods. So Cindy, in your new role, would love to hear from you about some exciting product launches or marketing initiatives of late that you really want to showcase and you're excited about.
Yeah, so I'd say there's two things. One is a product line that we are just shipping, so it's brand new. Breaking news here, guys, breaking news. Our Popcorn Indiana brand has actually entered an exclusive partnership with Netflix to bring a co-branded Popcorn Indiana Netflix product line to the shelf. So you can tell I'm very excited about it because Netflix is the number one streaming platform, right? It crosses every age, every gender, every entertainment genre. And it's exciting and it's part of culture. And something that we bring forward is high quality popcorn products and innovation. We are constantly playing in the lab with flavors and ingredients. And the goal here is to bring shoppers the Netflix brand with flavors that we say are as unique as their watch list, right? Because everyone's streaming list is super unique. We're going to bring some unique flavors. So we've got our swoon-worthy cinnamon kettle corn and our classic cheddar kettle corn that are—
Say that three times fast.
I know. See, you can't. So that's rolling out now. We'll hit Walmart in June. And then the other thing that I've been super excited about, because I got to dive in the second I walked in the door, is the Hamburger Helper refresh. So we, you know, took it over from General Mills and immediately started to work on, okay, how do we refresh this to get it onto shelf and into people's worlds again? And a couple things that I'm super proud of. One is we actually put money back into the product and we didn't charge consumers for it. So as you can imagine, when you have a brand that just isn't, you know, worked on for quite a while, it ends up being the one that gets costed out. So when we bought it, we did some research and there were a few flavors that just kind of had lacked that kind of powerful spices and herbs, you know, the flavor that you love. So we went ahead and reformulated those to get it back to what it used to be when we were kids. Did not pass that along to the shopper, which is great. And then we just put advertising on in the beginning of January. And guys, I don't think I've ever seen a marketing mix model come back so positive. The lifts, our pretest was off the charts. Our marketing mix model is amazing. And our sales, our latest week sales were up almost 22% versus base. And that's cutting out any promotion. That's nothing. That is just versus base. That's unheard of in the CPG world. So
bravo, Cindy. And I've got to imagine, you know, as you kind of talked about the customers you're working with, and you made mention particularly to Netflix and the prior product. I mean, I think about this as, in the digital age, retail media, what a perfect mechanism to accelerate the sale of these products even further, right? To be able to use streaming television based upon the targeting of audiences. Just this is such a great opportunity.
It is. It really is. And I'm excited to see the partnership that we're getting from our customers. They see the vision. They understand the journey that we're taking. And just seeing something like Helper explode, it's like this latent love that's sitting there that you just needed to, you know, light the match and get it on fire.
I love that, the love, because there are so many people that have nostalgic memories of that brand and their childhood and mom and dad making it for them. What a great opportunity to refresh that brand the way you've had that opportunity to do at some of your prior stops in your career. What a great opportunity. Sri, I'll pass it over to you.
I want to make sure I get that number right. Did I hear 22% left coming off the marketing model?
Yes. That's an actual in-market sale lift.
Yeah. Congratulations. Good to kind of see a brand succeed like that, but also speaks to the strength of your boldness in creating that partnership, for voting, for going down the Netflix path and leveraging it to see how popcorn movies, shows, and understanding that the world is moving away from still cinema to streaming cinema, as well as streaming shows, etc., and leveraging it. So congratulations to you and to all of you in Eagle Foods for leading the way over there. So this journey of a career, whether it's personal care, whether it's food as you do now, larger brands in food, not everything delivers a 22% success. That journey involves starting something, stopping something, acknowledging in market it isn't working, yank it out. You give an example of not taking something to market. Tell us about the lessons you've learned in your career as a brand leader.
Yeah, so the first thing, and I don't know if I realized this early in my career, to be a really good marketer, you have to be a good business owner. You have to take the time throughout your career to learn not just the different aspects of marketing, but how it impacts the actual company and how you can drive business. Without that, it's hard to ever fully understand and leverage the power of marketing if it doesn't connect back. So over my journey, I've taken roles specifically because I've thought I can learn something here and I can also add value here. I don't chase the title or the company specifically. It's, hey, this is really interesting. I think I can grow in this company. And that's where I am today. And I don't think I would have known that early on. Beyond that, you know, I talk about being insatiably curious and always learning, listening, adapting, collaborating. If you turn any of that off, this world moves so fast. You can be out of it for 6 months and the media landscape has changed. Targeting has changed. Algorithms have changed. You have to stay curious and keep learning in order to be an expert at the craft. And some of that also comes from other people, right? So collaborating, one thing we do at Eagle is we're always collaborating. Ideas come from everywhere. We talk all the time and it helps us all learn and be better. So we kind of help each other, pick each other up and make each other better in what we do. And also use the principle of there's no such thing as failure. I think when you're a marketer, if you think about, I don't want to fail, it prevents you from doing things that could be amazing. So I tell my teams from the very beginning, we don't use the word failure. We use the word learning. We've learned, we did not fail. Because we all know the innovation rule, right? Most things do fail. That's okay. You learned something and it did something for the brand, the company, yourself, your team.
Yeah, I have a follow-up for you, Cindy, which is, you know, the largest scale brands in the world, they are at a space and a pace where they are very P&L focused, and brand stewards completely understand that they got to deliver a P&L. But I've also found, Cindy, that delivery of the P&L holds them back from being externally focused, which is the curiosity element that you spoke to. I'm amazed at how many marketers today, big brands, don't even have a TikTok account. They rely on Gen Z to tell them what to do on TikTok. And here we are, we're living in a digital content creator world. Any thoughts on the over-focus of P&L versus being externally focused?
I think to win, you have to have both, because ultimately the P&L is driven by the consumer. So if you're only focused on P&L, you will continually focus on cutting costs, doing promotions, things that don't build your brand. And you give that 5-7 years and you're going to be in a very diminished place from a brand perspective than if you consider them both together. When you have a P&L objective and goal, you should also have a brand objective and goal. The brand has to build for long-term sustainability. And I think you're completely right, is most companies forget that piece. And there are some, which you know them, who are very, very good at it. Nike didn't get to where they got because they only focused on P&L. Dove did not get to where it got because it only focused on P&L. It focused on both of them. And it has to come from leadership down, right? To say, we believe enough in this effort, even if it's not exactly right for the P&L, we know the long-term potential. And that's something that we do at Eagle really well is, you know what, this one might make zero profit, but it builds us. It does. You have to look at the benefits in a multidimensional way versus just in a financial way.
And I think doing that requires incredible leadership skills to bring your colleagues along on that journey. So in that vein, I'd love to understand how you as a marketing leader seek to foster innovation and creativity amongst the ranks to build out that successful future pipeline of products that'll lead to sustainable growth.
Yep. I am very big on empowering the team to own their business, right? I want them to have an entrepreneurial mindset that still has the business acumen, right? I think when everyone has the same goals, communication is very transparent. Everyone knows what they're marching towards. Once you give that empowerment and the tools, right? The coaching, the training, the tools, people feel that much more passionate about going and doing the cool things, right? So for us, you know, we have what I call non-working days in quotes, because we're working, but it doesn't feel like work, right? So we will get out in the market and spend an entire day at different grocery stores that people just don't necessarily have all the time near their homes, right? We'll go and do something that is in our consumer's vein, right? Go watch some Netflix for a great example. We also will do days where we just sit for a couple hours and kick around the what ifs, right? New ideas. We'll sit in the lab and R&D will rapid prototype just wild ideas that they don't even have a brief for. But it's just a way to get those creative juices flowing and think about what could be. And then where does that go? Does that go anywhere? I also really encourage everyone to take ideas from anyone. So to be a marketer that's really going to drive growth, you have to have a growth mindset. You have to say yes way more than you say no. You have to take ideas from everybody and then sort through to figure out what is the best idea to actually move forward with? Or do some of these ideas spark another idea? So I encourage people to throw out those crazy ideas or the things they think might be dumb, because they might lead somewhere really great, even if that initial idea isn't the absolute winner. So I think ultimately it comes down a lot to culture and to giving your team that freedom to make mistakes, the freedom to quote, say dumb things, the freedom to explore, and the freedom to not just focus solely on the numbers and the tasks every single day, but to take that step back and absorb the world around you, get into culture, and really understand what's going on in the world.
You know, if Sri didn't give me the freedom to say a lot of dumb things, I don't think we would have gotten past episode 2 of this podcast. So
it's trying to be funny as always. So that's the freedom that I kind of give them. I love what you said, right? Like, get out and market, act like your consumer is a big one. And generally, if you say, hey, watch Netflix, people are like, WTF. But yeah, of course, that's what consumers do. If you're going to create a popcorn for people while watching Netflix, you need to know how they feel and how they spend their time watching that show over a duration of time. Well done. My hat's off to you. I love the idea of the lab with the rapid prototype. Most large brands think they do, but in reality, they're following a playbook of a strat plan. So lastly, you talked about some of the brands you just got were from General Mills. You just gave the example earlier in the show. It's kind of bittersweet that was my past life. And those are brands we wanted to divest because we were not investing in marketing. So I'd actually want to get into that area with you. You picked it up. You're investing in marketing. And I don't like the word just challenger brands, etc., because I call you as brands of the future. So those brands that you just acquired that weren't big enough for General Mills, how are you converting that into a brand of the future by reigniting it?
Yeah, that's a great question, because these brands are just, in my mind, they have so much potential. First of all, thank you for naming them Helper and Suddenly. Those are two fantastic names that my brain creatively goes to many directions. Thank you for that. When I think about reigniting them, there's this balance of continuing to deliver to the people that love your brand, right? Those loyal consumers that continue to buy it, but also starting to have that vision of where the brand can go. Can't divulge too much here, but there is a vision that I have for bringing these brands into the contemporary culinary world while still staying true to who they are. Helper is never going to be a 5-star meal, right? But it serves a wonderful purpose. It has over 30 SKUs, right? Someone could literally eat Helper every single day and still have a different meal every day of the month. How do we now build off of that and bring them more taste experience, more convenience, more value, not necessarily price, but more value in what they're getting? And Suddenly is actually quite similar because it is this brand that really owns their own little category. Yes, they compete with sides, but they're the only one that really is doing this cold pasta salad. There's a journey that we can take. And I hope that that brand can bring in some younger users as well. It's an older brand. So if we haven't talked about it for 15, 20 years, the younger generation doesn't even know what it is. And it's delicious. These products are actually delicious. So I hope that we can bring more people into that journey of loving Suddenly and Helper. And I think what you'll see is a lot of work around marketing, innovation, expansion, new ways of talking about the brands, and new ways of showing up from a brand expression perspective. And by the way, Lefty, the little glove guy for Hamburger Helper, what an icon that is. Another thank you. He is fantastic.
I want to remind our audience, please stop by cpgguys.com, our flagship website, where you can access all of our content. Our episodes are organized and tagged based upon subjects like retail media, brand building. And I suspect that now that Sri has a little more time on his hands, he's probably going to go through and make sure that the tagging is even more refined, so you can find exactly the niche or topic that is of particular interest to you. And if you think you've got some subject matter expertise that you would like to share, Drop us an email at contact@cpgguys.com. Maybe you can be on a future episode of this podcast. And last thing I want to say is we are so incredibly grateful. We recently passed 30,000 followers on LinkedIn. I am still blown away by that number. So many great industry professionals, big and small brands, big and small retailers, industry service providers. And a day does not go by without somebody reaching out to Sri or me or Brian and mentioning how much they get and learn and enjoy listening to this podcast to make them more conversant in this omni-channel digital world that we live in. Cindy, thank you so much for taking time out of your day. I know you're away from the office and doing some other things, but thanks for taking time today to talk with us about your journey and how you are invigorating some venerable brands for the new millennium at Eagle Family Foods. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This was very fun.
Yeah, great. So Sri, really interesting conversation. We have so many great guests, and I think Cindy brought a really interesting perspective moving from, you know, kind of a big scale portfolio enterprise brands to one that's built through acquisition and taking some maybe neglected brands that weren't getting kind of the budget love that they were and trying to breathe new life into them and bring them into this century. What are some of your thoughts on what Cindy shared with us?
As always, I've got my notes, Peter. So I love that we started up top by saying, look, there were three words. What's the role of a brand marketer? Be creative, refresh brands and portfolio, and deliver innovation that keeps the consumer coming back to them again and again. She talked about being grounded in brand audience and reach importance. Her background comes from J. Walter Thompson, where she worked with brands such as Unilever in the personal care space, Kellanova, aka Kellogg's of a past life, and then thinking different on smaller companies where she's had the chance to do that as well, where it was just her and contractors, somewhat like a star. Food is not for the faint of heart. I wouldn't know a thing about that at all whatsoever, Peter, but we talked about what are the attributes of food that make it special, right? And I love the way she described, hey, people need food to survive, but others don't see what your food habits are, whereas in clothing, fashion, shoes, hats, jewelry, cars, people do. And that was an interesting, you know, kind of, I've spent 29 and a half years in this industry, and I've never heard a marketer from some of the largest brands in the world ever say that to me. And here's the downside. Because of that, it's easy to copy food. So what do you do when that's the situation? You focus on loyalty. How do you focus on loyalty? Deeply believe in this statement that she made. Focus on product taste. Taste is a differentiator and keeps people coming back. But then we started getting into how do you market? We started chatting about the role of private label, attracting people at the point of sale. I asked her about the value coming from private label and not, etc. And values, communications, that's what matters at the end of the day, how you communicate value, not necessarily just price points. And then find a brand purpose. What's different? What are you going to give somebody different that makes them want to come back for more? Talk about having the importance of data. Lucky to have a lot of data to work with. Syndicated data is for trends. And then consumer input, because it's their daily life, would actually shape what you talk to retail out and have one or two partners that you can balance things off, what actually sells in the marketplace. Digital stuff, getting the flywheel going, full funnel marketing, not just lower funnel marketing. Well, that's important as well. Convenience being the anchor of today's omnichannel. Love the meal solution recipes piece. I don't think any large brand at scale has still understood the role they can play in meals and solutions. So it's good that you're doing it. But Cindy, I'd be watchful when big brands figure out they're going to swallow up that space. But good news, they haven't so far. I didn't know milk is such a huge recipe anchor. That's something, Peter, for you and me to note for the future. Love the whole story in the popcorn Indiana Netflix line. The fact that you have non-working days where you can simulate your actual customers and their habits, etc. The 22% number you obviously gave me on the sales lift made me fall off my chair, but y'all have obviously done something good. How did you do it? Because you're driving this culture of be a P&L leader first, which is fabulous, comes back to the 22%. Be externally curious, media landscape changing every 6 months, One way you can do that in that non-working day, get out in market, spend time in front of a store, but walk the customer's mile, the shopper's mile. I love the rapid prototyping in the lab. Lots of people claim it. Sounds like you guys are doing it. And finally, building brands of the future. While in my previous role, we divested brands because we weren't investing in them and didn't see much value in them, you found value just in the name alone, like Hamburger Helper. And you referred to a largely ignored kind of brand iconic moment, which was Lefty. And you're leveraging that to drive it home. So congratulations. I hope I got that right.
Yes, thank you.
All right, Sri. Hey, thank you for that summary. And as always, Sri, thanks for joining me on this journey. I know you love these conversations as much as I do because, you know, the secret, the dirty little secret is nobody learns more from this podcast than you and I do. We get, because we're the ones that get to ask the questions we want answered. So anyhow, to our audience, thanks for joining us. And we look forward to speaking with you on the next episode of, wait for it, the CPG Guys podcast. Goodbye. The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.